March 26, 2021, it's a Watt for Pedro show.
On the more private thing for myself, on the cover of an Albert Eiler record released in Denmark was a story that you once should have had a dream in which you were playing like Albert Eiler. That's what the story said.
No kidding. Who wrote that?
I don't know. Just somebody who wrote a liner notes.
Well, it's kind of true. It's really true. Because I had a dream once, and the whole band was playing like that. You know. And I don't know whether I was in the band, but I felt the band was mine or I was in it, but I was watching this band. I had a dream like that around 1957, you know? And the whole band, man, had that kind of sound. So that's really true.
It was more or less suggested that you had that dream after you had heard Albert Eiler.
Well, it happened before. I had it before.
Isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, I had it before.
It's different.
I knew this was coming. I knew this was coming. I felt it was coming. I didn't know. I don't know the future, but I felt this was coming.
We heard Love Supreme yesterday, and I know the record, of course. I played it on my program, as usual. And in the liner notes, if I may call them so, on Love Supreme, he said it's not the complete work, which is on the record. For instance, when I compare the records with what I heard yesterday, there is no bass solo, not that long anyway, on the record. And you talked about the part that Archie Shepp playing on was left out.
Yeah. Well, the first part of it, Archie Shepp played on it, and I think I had another bass on there, but I didn't use this part. Because I had two parts. I had one part that I was singing on, and I had another part, not singing, chanting. And I had another part that Arch and the bass was on. And when I, and editing, and I felt that I wanted to use the part that I had the singing on. So that's the one we did use. But I made a thing recently with Archie.
Oh, yeah?
And also another young tenor man named Farrell Saunders, who is something to hear, too. And Freddie Hubbard and trumpeter and Dewey Johnson and Marion Brown on alto, John Shikai. A big band thing, you know, which is...
And the way you smile...
It's something in it I like, yeah. Is this carbonated water here? Or is it? Well, I taste it.
This
is lemonade.
Yeah, it's.
I do.
Anyway.
Okay.
Let's do it.
Yeah.
Just one other thing. In fact, I've never been at. Open air jazz festivals like this, but you played Newport several times, I guess. And in fact, I know, and it's a little minor festival in the States. When you compare them to this affair, yeah.
How do I compare the festivals in the state to this?
Yeah, I mean the reaction from the crowd. Was the crowd noisier
they compare. Better? They're about the same. You know, it's about the same as the ones I've been on. It's about the same.
Because for 10,000 people that are here in this park, they're pretty quiet when they're
10,000?
Yeah.
When were there 10,000 there?
That's what they say, that the park can hold, man.
The part that we played last night?
Yeah.
You're taking over 10,000? It didn't look that big to me.
It didn't look that big to me either. But somebody who had to do something with the organization said it can hold 10,000 people.
We should know.
But they're pretty quiet.
10,000.
You like to play these affairs like these open air things?
No, I don't prefer them because usually the acoustics are kind of horrible, you know. I prefer a certain type of club, but we can't always get that either. Or a concert hall, you know, good. I find the smaller places, the more compact they are, the better our sound is held together, you know. And we can hear and feel each other better.
You like the Concertgebouw in Amsterdam? The Concertgebouw in Amsterdam, you know, that concert hall.
Yeah, we get a good sound there. I can hear. I can hear pretty well. I can hear everything, you know. Some places, as soon as you hit the first note, it goes all over the place. You can't feel the flow of the thing, you know.
Are you distracted very much by outside interference? I mean, noisy crowds, people walking around, people taking pictures. Because you don't look like it, see?
Mm-mm.
You're not too much disturbance. Too concentrated on the music.
The problems that I have in music, they're always there, you know. They take my time pretty completely, you know.
Friday. I think the last one for March 2021. And soon is D. Boone's B-Day, April Fool's.
Mm-hmm.
Ah, you can hear I'm not man alone. Well, I should tell people we started off with John Coltrane talking to Michael DeRuyter, July 27, 1965. A little bit there, spiel. Mr. John Coltrane. Joe Beiser told me it was trippy to hear his voice for the first time. The North Carolina guy. And then we had Jeff Arnold, Casey Block, Aaron Duggan, and Silver Ash. I guess they were supplementing this other unit. We'll get an explanation. With Lifeboat. And, Brother Matty set the Love Grotto on the Pleasure Point. Come by myself, I'm still quite quarantine alone, but I'm not man alone. Those engineers in Estonia with their Skype invention. We got Jeff Arnell with us. Jeff, bring your earliest musical recollection, please.
I grew up in outside of Atlanta, and at that time, when I grew up, there was a lot of space, and even though music wasn't around, I was outside a lot, and I was, I think that even though I've lived in a lot of cities, through my life, I was just tuned in to some of the sounds around me in that open space. And, so I don't know, how I got the art bug or the music bug and those musical memories. I think at some point in middle school, I have an older brother and he started bringing records home. And I think that is when I started fully like tuning into music that was being made.
Well, you said you're outside, so maybe it was the music of nature, those natural rhythms like wind and birds. But there was no instruments in the pad.
No instruments at all. And I actually couldn't, I was trying to think about how I even decided to get a drum set. Or I think the first drum set that I got, I had to, advocate for it.
What, were you in the choir, the marching band, or shit like that?
No. And I think I got turned on because I started listening to records and started Hallowed Ground by the Valentines.
Whoa. Okay. And the first gig you saw?
Well, that's a special moment that you're a part of, Mike.
I didn't know. Well, I'm getting to the mind reading part, but in the meantime,
Jeff,
please use words.
And I'm not even a collector. I listen to records or tapes or whatever is around. But I dug this out this morning because I knew that we were going to talk, and it's a two ticket stubs from 1985 from the Fabulous Fox Theater, November 30th, 1985. I would have been 14. I saw your band, the Minutemen, open for R.E.M.
I was part of the band. He was me.
Yeah, so, excuse me, sorry. But
and I remember the venue because they have little lights in the overhead that are like stars.
Yeah, it's such a cool theater and was such a great experience. And I was really lucky that I was able to witness that and be there. And I do think that I got a little bit of a bug. And that is... I saw a bunch of other gigs at the Fox and other places in Atlanta and Athens throughout the 80s and 90s, but that was the first gig that I saw, or first band that I saw, was you were part of it. So I am grateful for that.
So you saw George Hurley play drums?
Yeah, I did. And
were you playing by then?
Well, no, I think that all of this started happening around the same time, and I can't really place a time on when I started playing the drums, but... I was nowhere as I just like, I think I got a three piece, like a drum, a bass drum, a snare drum, and a mounted tom and a ride cymbal. And I'm like, how is that a drum set now? And, but it was definitely, I had to then save up some money to get the other parts of the kit, like the floor tom and the hi-hat.
Well, what about instruction? Was it with man alone? You just manhandle or did you get teaching?
Yeah, I started out that way. And then eventually, it really just dug in deep, and music has been, and art has been part of my life from that moment on. But I started on my own and then got some really good teachers down in Georgia and eventually went to college up in Baltimore. And, so really started it. Music saved my life, man, for sure.
Yeah.
And because I think
continues to save my life today. You know how Georgie did it? He got some headphones and the Who first record, My Generation, and a Billy Cobham Spectrum.
Well, I don't know how you play along with that, but that's
he used those two records to teach himself drums. Just went at it.
He plays left-handed, so that's a whole twisty, turny thing.
I don't know, even George, you knew that, right? Because he's just getting the shit over the headphones. And he's just, you know what I mean? He just wanted to learn drums and made himself do it. And
he's a great
rid of the skateboard. And so I'm glad you got to see that, because that was one of the last 2 weeks of the band's history.
Yeah, I hold that that event and that evening as kind of a start of a chapter, a big chapter of my life.
Well, let's play something a little different. Crickets for Magnetic Tape.
We'll be right back.
go. Watt for Pedro Show started that chunk of music off with Crickets for Magnetic Tape, Jeff Arnell. Or Sort of Jellies at Pink Pond from Dustin Wong. Dustin's got a brand new record next week, huh? It's incredible. Dustin Wong, where does everybody get their music now? At the badcamp.com place, right? Because there's no middleman, yeah. Motherfuckers. Tobacco after that with Stridex Dealer, Mr. Tom out of Pittsburgh, brand new. Bombas Printed, Black and Bluegrass, just got another trove of archive stuff released. Hands Rotten out of Switzerland, No Force. Jim on the Move, Hardcore in My Blood from Slang, from Hi-Fi Club with Eugene Chadbourne. I think he's in Winston-Salem. That was one of the last gigs, mm-hmm. too. I think Charlotte was the last gig for Minuteman. Entitled Ig and Thirst Jamming in Little Haiti, part of Miami, 2016. Third part. And then finally, Heart for Milford Graves, Aaron Dugan, Jason Fraticelli, and Jeff Arnold. And we lost Brother Milford Graves, an incredible music man. Yeah, beautiful man. But he put in a long shift, and he shared a lot of knowledge. It was beautiful.
Yeah, I'm really happy that I was able to get to know him. And that track is for Milford, but it's, you know, I think it's for all of us, and how so we can be tuned in to how our internal rhythms and our heart is connected to each other and everything.
Yeah, because especially when you get, like, educated music, right? Some people take it into, like, the realm of sports. Like, they'll use John Coltrane's Giant Steps to cut each other.
Mm-hmm.
Fuck.
Well, I think if you get some musicians together, even the best ones like Milford, they'll tell you some really funny stories about each other.
Funny stories are okay, but this idea that you use music as a club to say you're not good enough, I think that's kind of lame.
It is.
But anyway, back to your story. I keep fucking getting on tangents and driving you off the road here. I'm so sorry.
That's all right.
So sorry, Jeff. So, first time you played in front of people?
We set up a gig in Stone Mountain, Georgia.
I played there once.
Which, it's probably not at this place, but it was like a social place, a VFW or something. And my buddy, who was a neighbor, used to spend half of his time in Detroit with his dad, I think, and half of his time with his mom next door. And he was coming back to Georgia, and we did a kind of a welcome home party for him. And we set up the gig, and my little group played at that gig.
So you had a band, but this is the first gig. So like it was a practice band?
We just messing around.
Yeah, practice.
Covers. Yeah, and I wrote a little stuff. I played guitar a little bit back then too, and but I think that night we played all covers. It was a real mix.
How did you get on the guitar?
Because it's interesting because I think that there's when you're playing and you're around folks, and this is the thing about music saving my life, and maybe I'm sure it saved lots of other people's lives. Where it's so closely connected to kind of mischief and drugs and, downtime that some of the guys that I was playing with, they were drifting one way and the guitars were just around. And so it's kind of like, well, if we're going to do something, we should write some songs. And I just started playing. So I just started writing a little bit of songs. And that ends up where you get something like Cricket for Magnetic Tape is when I went to school and just started studying music and started learning about composition and how all of these things that I was into, still into new music, like modern classical music and jazz and this independent rock music, how they're all connected how they can kind of play.
Let me get this straight. You grabbed onto the guitar because you wanted a composition tool and you couldn't find it with the drums.
Yeah. Yeah, I wrote a couple, nothing, but I did, I remember just teaching myself all the scales, which pretty, it's set up in a nice way, the guitars in general, same with the piano, and just started learning that myself. But then I did, you know, I had a buddy, my friend's mom taught music lessons. I studied with her before I went to college, and she really helped me out. She was a great, she is, like, she's still around. She, she's like one of those ladies who teaches you, teaches piano lessons out of her house. And then, you know, we put, it was the funniest thing. We put, what is it? The Doors Light My Fire, right? You know, in front of her, you know, she could just sight read, like, whatever. And she would put it in front of her and just cranked it out. We were like, just cracking up about it. Cause she was a, you know, church piano player.
No, it's like, reading something from Shakespeare, right? You weren't around 400, 500 years ago, but you learned how to read, so you could.
Yeah, she was great. So she taught me a little bit of music theory and a little bit of piano, and then I went.
So what's the problem with composing on? You know, Chico Hamilton had problems getting songwriting credits. Oh, drummers cannot write songs. What's the, you know, because a big mission of mine is trying to make the bass guitar a composition tool.
It is, for sure. That first record that you asked about, Brian Ritchie, man, phew.
From Violent Femme, yeah.
Yeah, that's a lead instrument. That's a motive, a driver.
Well, I'm not talking about lead instrument. I'm talking about as a tool in composing.
Right. Well,
I think Gordon, all their big hits was the singer guitar man. But I think Brian wrote a lot bunch, too.
Yeah,
You're absolutely right.
I don't know how drummers get credit. I think that kind of going back to someone like Milford or Andrew Surreal or Sonny Murray or these guys who were more into jazz music, how they're able to change what a drummer does in a band. And you know, the credit, I don't know. I mean, I think it's either a collective unit and you share credit or – all of that stuff is a little bit of, it's still a mystery to me. I don't understand.
Of the problem is the notes are real short on a drum. So, like, they're just thinking, oh, it's just a rhythm thing. But actually, there are notes, right? They just last a tiny little fucking time.
It changes the dynamic. I mean, if one drummer's in one band and then he's not in that band, it's a different group.
Yeah. What Hunt Sales, right? The beginning of Lust for Life. There's debate over that stuff.
Oh, yeah.
But even though that came over Armed Forces Radio, I mean, who has the ideas on these things, I guess. I was just, I'm really interested in people that are on piano and drums also composing. That's what, I'm like, what's that called? Democracy or some shit.
It might be, you know, I always thought, and it kind of goes, you mentioned the natural sounds. I think crickets is about that. It was recording, actually doing field recordings of crickets, and then using a quarter-inch reel-to-reel to put that together. So that was in 94. That was, you know, and that was, there was no, Pro Tools didn't exist at that point. And so it was really splicing tape, and it was looking at the way they did that stuff in the 50s, you know, the early kind of electronic music pioneers, put, you know, John Cage and Edgar Varese, how they put tapes together.
Well, the big tape person was a lady named Delia Derbyshire. She performed the first version of the Doctor Who theme, and that's all from cutting fucking tape.
It's amazing. But it's it's organizing sound. I think the way the drums, the way that I think about playing music is really composing. And that's probably why I don't play in a band, or I've never really played in a band. I just, find these different situations where you could make something together and we could work on something together. And even though we're shut down, we're doing a little bit of that now. And that was with the Dugan track and Jason Fraticelli. That track was done just this month. So
you're saying, like, the traditional role of the drummer's like perpetual sideman.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, if there's no singer, where does the democracy, it goes to what, guitar? I don't know.
Maybe. Right. Well, you know, me being this kind of middle thing, right? Hot, cold, lukewarm, whatever the fuck, you know, that spinal tap shit. The bass is kind of like a drummer. So I have a big heart for drummers. Especially with fucking rock and roll, because it's a rhythm music.
Yeah, and the drums and bass are just so so connected and so critical if it's something's going to work or not.
Right. I mean, it looks like a guitar, but where's it sounds? Kick and tom. Maybe if you slap, there's a little snare drum there, but it's not really a guitar. It's a weird kind of drum, and you got to fit, and you can use it to glue that drum guy in his trap kit to the rest of the thing or not.
Yeah.
Or let it fall apart. You know what I mean? It's really critical. And also, being low frequency, you got to watch which notes you pick, because too many notes and you ruin it.
Yeah. I mean, I think that unfortunately, or fortunately, whichever way you look at it, I'm a busy drummer these days. And
not all your kit, because your snare and your cymbals, they're all up in the high. You got a big spectrum.
Yeah, but I do think that a lot of that it's about thinking of it as like orchestration, you know, and I think a lot of every instrument does that, but the way that, you know, I work on to this day, like a lot of West African kind of rhythms and trying to find that independence and trying to figure out how all those parts work together solo. And then you put that with a group or other sounds, and then it becomes really interesting and fun.
Tony Adams. Fela Kunti.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And who's the guy? I was way into that. Jack Bruce had a big cream. Ginger Baker went and studied with him.
Yeah, and I think that's something that I was, you know, got this experience firsthand with, like, Milford Graves drumming. It's like where you have these polyrhythms playing at different tempos. At, you know, so the pulse is there, and the pulse is never, and this was his big thing, and I do think it comes back to the heart, is that our heart and our living organisms are never working at the same tick, metronomic tick, all the time, and so it's going to breathe, and the drumming or the bass playing, it's all going to breathe, and I think that that's something that I try to keep in mind, I guess.
Yeah, and the different rates of breathing, that's the syncopation.
Yeah.
Yeah, really interesting. We're at the end of the first hour, March 26, 2021, Pedro Show. Special guest, Jeff Arnell. Hold tight for hour two. March 26, 2021, second hour, Watt Pedro Show. Thank you.
an inch or make any sound. I don't wanna deal with the end of the show. If you say goodbye and I say no, no, no. I love you so much, can you leave me alone? We hold each other in the pale blue glow. So I must feed my needs. I could go on for days with this mindless string of cliches laid bare on the page.
Thank you.
Watch for Pedro show. Started the second hour with Silver Ash with Aaron Duggan, or Dugan, sorry. Casey Block, Jeff Arnall, Deathless. Well, and this is with Silver Ash, so I guess you guys are part of a... You were helping out another group?
No, no, we were just...
Oh, Silver Ash is composed of those three guys.
Yeah.
Okay, okay.
Yeah, with Dugan and Casey Block on electronics.
Right, right. So it's not like there's this band with you three. You three make up fucking Silver Ash, okay.
Yeah, that goes back to Democracy, too.
Yeah, so watch a slow learner.
It's
just semantics. Ben Salter out of Tasmania, where Brian Ritchie is, with Enorme. Luca Sabella, I talked to him yesterday from Sydney. Eyes for Itchy. Mm-hmm. His thing's all about performance, but he's starting to learn about recording, he said. Like 4-channel. Fifth Pale. Pale Bug. And I guess Pale Bug is composed of Dietrich Eichmann, John Hughes, mm-hmm. Astrid Vines, and Jeff Arnall. You. Okay. Yeah. Now I understand what the with means. Okay. Because it's almost like there was parentheses around here. And... So you go to school in Baltimore.
Yeah.
And then what you're chasing down is composition more than performance?
I think so. So I ended up going to Peabody Conservatory, which was a music school in Baltimore, and studied. It was, I played in an orchestra there, and learn, which is a terrifying experience, I have to say. And it always was and always is, but I really enjoyed that. And I kind of made that decision because, the person who was running that program, the percussion program there, is a person named, John Haas, and he is a timpanist, but he did all of this work with Frank Zappa. And I was, kind of went on these little tangents, little paths in my life, and I was like, oh, he must be really cool, and I would love to learn how do you do that? How do you play timpani and all of the mallet instruments in a band or, in a project with Frank Zappa? And so I went and studied with him, but then in the course of that time at Peabody, I really started getting the composition bug, and I ended up studying with another wonderful mentor in my life, Stuart Saunders Smith, who's also a drummer, but he's known as a composer, and he writes super difficult music for percussion. He wrote a whole series for vibraphone, and so I had to get my reading together, and like a lot of stuff where it's like 5 against 4 against 13, all of this kind of difficult stuff, but beautiful, very organic. It doesn't sound very mechanical. It breathes. And he changed my life. He wrote down a couple names from our first lesson, which was, before that cricket piece. So, 92 maybe. And, he wrote down John Cage. He wrote down Karl Heinz, Stockhausen. He wrote down, a couple other, Xenakis, and these kind of contemporary classical heavyweights. And I just forget playing the drums for a while and just start thinking about sound and composing.
As far as rock and that kind of situation, you ever hear Art Tripp?
I know that name.
He played with Frank Zappa, and he started in the Cincinnati Symphony as, I think, even a teenager. He ended up playing with, I know him more from, I'm more of a Captain Beefheart guy.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
And so he's got, the captain names you, right? So his beef, magic band name was Ed Marimba. He started out, he went from the classical to the rock. And, for me, let me get your take on this, Jeff. The whole idea of genre, is it music, music?
Yeah, okay. I'm with you.
Okay. I want to play this chord. Quartel U Q?
Yeah, that's a street in Brooklyn, Quartel U.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm ignorant, sorry. Let's play it.
Thank you.
Watch for Pedro show. That was Cartel U, Q. And Cartel U, people, is a street in Brooklyn. What? You know, he's been to Brooklyn, but a lot to learn, Watt. And this was with a musical project called Transit that had Jeff Arnall, guest, Seth Misterka, Ruben Ratting, and Nate Woolley. Then we had Brian Posse. He's going to be a guest in a couple months. One Arm Yank with Sekum M. Fuck that means. Mike Cooper after that on Passin' Bamboo. Jeff Arnall finally with Seth Misterka and Chris Dahlgren in a song called Red, not the King Crimson, but.
Red.
Don't worry about Bill Bruford. Ever influence?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he's killer.
But you know Bob Lee.
Mind blowing.
Bob Lee's a drummer friend of mine. He's in the Black Gang and shit. And we were talking the other day, just by coincidence, about Mr. Who's the guy on the stool? Fripp, Mr. Robert Fripp.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
He actually made tunes out of fucking prac rudiments that Bill Bruford would do.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, don't waste anything, right?
Yeah, I got to see some of that stuff. So influential and so free and complex, but also it doesn't sound complex because it's, you know, that period in the early 80s where it was really connected to like Gamelan music, you know, and with Adrian Blue and Fripp. It was really spectacular.
The problem was the voice, right? It sounded too much like the talking head guy. But I was thinking more of the early 70s.
Oh, yeah.
The only thing I didn't like about Bruford and nothing, just the snare, it sounded like a timbale or a hungry seal. Dong, dong, dong. But yeah, incredible.
He has a great book called When in Doubt, Roll. A drum book?
Really? What's it like about reading about drums?
Endless. I mean, there's so much to learn, and there's so many different players and different, you know, I mean, if you want to, you know, another person I saw in Georgia all the way back then is, I saw Tony Williams play. My God.
Well, you know what? The first song I played today, Lifetime, Lifeboat. I was thinking of Lifetime.
Yeah. Great group. Yeah, he, but then, you know, that whole kind of lineage, Tony Williams, Max Roach, Elvin Jones, Papa Joe Jones. And so that's like, you could just go spend a lifetime looking at that stuff. And then
Philly Joe Jones, Papa John Creek, but Philly Joe Jones.
Philly Joe Jones. Yeah.
Supposedly that's how Miles lost his voice, was hollering at him how to play something called the shock cymbal. The hi-hat was, it was just a pedal. You didn't hit it with sticks, right? You doop, 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 doop.
That's right. Early on, it was like that. And it's just evolved and changed. Now, some of those rigs, I mean, they're pretty complex.
You know the word trap, right? It's an abbreviation.
Tell me more. I'm curious.
Contraption.
Oh, wow.
It was invented in New Orleans. Larry, from the last two years that I helped the Stooges with, was the drummer man. He told me about that.
That's great to know.
Yeah, it's a big evolution, that whole fucking thing. That's why, man, I don't want to shell drummers short. You know, the biggest fuck-up the Minutemen did was not have, you know, last 20 years I've had my drummers at the front of the stage. Fuck this shit, putting them in the back, in the rear with lots of gear and hiding them. That's bullshit. That's denial. I want to celebrate. Drummer man. So you get out of college. What do you do?
Yeah. Well, I go back to college because, you know, I'm a lifelong learner, I guess.
I think that's why I anyway.
Studied with Milford Graves. Okay. That's who I studied with. Okay. A graduate program.
Okay.
Up in Bennington, and that's where I met my wife, Estelle, who was a dancer, who is a dancer and choreographer.
Upstate New York.
It's in Vermont, and near, it's...
Oh, no, Bennington, yeah. What am I saying? I'm thinking Binghamton.
Binghamton's in New York. And Milford was at Bennington from 71 until he retired, and there was another important, really wonderful composer and trumpet player, Bill Dixon, at Bennington as well.
That's beautiful. You know what? I don't think the classroom is over till you're dead. Even though it might not be in an institution. Yeah, this is a fallacy that we stop learning at some point.
Yeah, and it was never really, I mean, I didn't know, and I still don't know, like, well, what's next? You know, I just knew that I kept going from Baltimore up to New York to see Milford, and I kept going to his concerts and, you know, just wanted to learn more from him, and I'm glad I did.
That's beautiful. That's beautiful. We're at the second hour, March 26, 2021, Dish Watt, Pedo Show, special guest, Jeff Ardon. Hold tight for hour three.
Interesting, because a lot of it, you just have to figure out. I mean, you know, every life is so, you know, my job now, I mean, I don't know. I just have to, it's like learning on the job all the time, because we're constantly changing.
It's beautiful, beautiful. People, March 26, 2021, it's third hour of the Watt for Pedro Show.
precious, how precious each moment is.
Pedro Show, start off the third hour with Carriage Barn from Charles Gale, Jeff Arnall. Charles Gale. He's a man who quit for a while, right?
He did,
And Nels Klein was one of the cats helped get him back.
Charles is a phenomenal saxophone player and piano player and human being.
Okay. Crane after that with Lessons in Life, Vision Festival 13. This was you with John Dierker? Gordon,
that's great.
Beefer Man?
Mm-hmm.
It's something live. It's, I guess, untitled, right? You didn't play the whole festival.
We played one set.
Yeah. Other people probably played also. But, why not?
You know, that's a whole thing right there.
Titles.
Right.
What about titles? You being in composition mode and stuff, are they important?
Sometimes they are and sometimes they aren't. I mean, I like to think about places, and that's where you get like this Cortelieu, but then other, if there's something in the moment, and it is an improvisation, then, you could go back and name it, or you could just leave it as the place where it took place, like the Vision Festival 13.
Yeah. Oh, okay. A lot of this stuff that you gave me, is it 100% composed, or there's some improvisation going on?
I would say it's about 70-30. 70 improvised 30% framework and structure.
Okay, so, you know, because it seems like there are two sides of the, right, of the music coin, but are they? Because I like this. You're one of the first cats who say that you can incorporate improv into composition, like this idea of free music, right?
Mm-hmm.
Can it still be free, but you make compositions?
What, sure.
What was Jack Wright called, or Bob Marsh? He said, jumping from the pole, jumping from the pole.
Well,
if you know where you're supposed to land, are you still jumping from the pole?
Well, I think that these playing situations and playing partners is definitely part of it, where you're at in your own personal growth as far as the musician and what you're into that day. I mean, my drumming today from yesterday is going to be different, even if I'm working on the same stuff in the same thing. And it's like with you touring, you know, you're playing every, you know, same set, but different cities, it's going to turn out a little bit different. The idea of, you know, if one's valued more than the other, I doubt it very seriously. I don't value, it's just music, one thing over the other.
Yeah, but they are kind of two different approaches, right? One is the blank slate, right? Get away from everything you know and be in the moment. And what we're doing here, especially if it's an ensemble, is you're trying to build a dialogue.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, it's like a conversation. And that's where you could, like my family, everyone talks over each other. And no, you know, but are you listening? Maybe a little bit. And you're adding to someone else's kind of argument or somebody else's point. And it's maybe making harmony, maybe making dissonance. Those kinds of things come out. I think that having a framework or structure is helpful. But I also think that we'll never really – because we all are creatures of habit and we're practicing. So how can we really, if we know how to play an instrument, we do have those kinds of physical mechanics that we have kind of our bodies memorized. And that's what I've learned a lot from working with dancers over the years, is that dancers are incredible. Like they have the whole three-dimensional space plus time, plus sound, plus everything else that we think about, but they have to think about moving in space in other bodies.
Absolutely.
And so it becomes really complex. And but the mechanics, that's the thing, is that I know how to do certain things on the drums. And I could try to work on new things that were – but it. I think our – who we are kind of in essence, and that kind of little spirit or spark gets, you know, a little bit bigger or in different situations or – kind of, you know, maybe sharper, you know, in the background than other situations. I don't know.
Here's a theory I got. The first drum was the planet Earth, and the first drumsticks was the bottom of human feet. And dancing was the first fucking drumming.
Yeah, I like that.
Here, let's listen to Walking in Rotterdam.
Thank you. Thank you.
Walk for Pedro Show, last music for this edition. Walking in Rotterdam. This is Kurt Cloninger, Jeff Arnall, Yucca from Japan. They probably say Yucca. Fun. And then Kalinicic and Tivian, two guys in Nashville. We have Only the Moment. And finally, Jeff Arnall, Dietrich Eichmann, Live in Hamburg, Part 1.
There's a title.
So titles kind of come last in your... Do you ever start with the title?
Probably not. I mean, I used to make some bad films, and maybe they started at that point with that stuff.
No, I ask because Watt always has to compose with the title first. And like, nobody I know... I ask all kinds of people. Nobody does it that way. Because focus. I need an anchor. You know, I'm a sorry entertainer. What can I say? So you said you've been using the situation we got going to compose. But are you still collaborating? Are you trading files over the internet?
Yeah, that's what we've been doing, or I've been doing. And I'm sure lots of other folks are doing it.
Watt's been doing a boat every fucking day.
Oh, cool, man. I think it's a lifeline. I stopped drumming for a bit, and during the shutdown gave me some time to actually see that, I have this drum set, and I really miss the joy of playing music and the joy of connecting with friends all over the place. And so, I just say someone like Aaron Dugan and Jason Fraticelli, guys that I knew them for a long time, and they, it was like being in the same room again. It's not exactly the same, but it's definitely sustenance. It's definitely nurturing for me.
Yeah. And, you're a guy who got started later in music on your device and then fucking, grabbed it by the horns and ran with it or wrote it top of it. What advice would you give to somebody who maybe ain't a kid, everybody starts as a kid, Like I mentioned, Joe Baez at 27. Vincent started painting at the last 10 years of his life.
Yeah.
What would be your advice, Jeff?
I mean, I do think that joy is part of what we do. And so I think if that's there, if there's this little bit of a spark, I think that the part of the equation that we're always, or I miss, and maybe others miss, is time, and the time that you put into something. And just being patient with it and having fun with it because, and being curious. And I think this is, has brought me to where I'm at today. I work at the Black Mountain College Museum, and Art Center in Asheville, North Carolina. And this place is extremely important to me because of its place in the history of art and culture in the world, but also because of it was a place that really allowed experimentation. And I think that would be advice that it's okay to experiment. It's okay not to sound like everyone else or not to sound like what they're going to play on the radio or, to do it your own way. And it, I have to give credit where credit is due. That goes back to the beginning. R.E.M. and the Minutemen on November 30th, 1995. So I'm looking at the ticket, Mike.
So you're saying, like, keep on keeping on, even though it might, especially when you're first starting to learn, just be patient, just keep at it.
Yeah, I think that some people might want to, I love, sometimes people are just geniuses, right? And they could just play whatever right away. But sometimes it does take some time. But that time that you put into it, being patient and finding other people that you want to do it with, I think is important. And I think community is important with all of this. And I think that's part of friendship and part of how we support each other and how independent art keeps alive.
That's great. That's beautiful. It's been a big honor to have you on the show, Jeff. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Mike.
Yeah, and you get some new music record with your buddies and shit. Come back on the show and let's rap with them and get further down the music road.
All right, man. It's been a great honor, and thank you again for doing what you do.
Oh, right back. Like you said, community, huh? People, it's been March 26th. 2021 Dishwap Pedro Show. Keep your powder dry.